And we're good.
Welcome to episode 4 of WP Dev Table. This is a show about WordPress development discussion. It's a hangout in a roundtable-like manner with WordPress developers, where we talk about tools, best practices, and most importantly, WordPress. My name is Bronson. I'm a lead developer at a company called Senza. We do bespoke design and development of WordPress themes. I'm also an organizer of the Brisbane WordPress meetup, and joining me as my co-host is Jason Resnick. I'll let Jason do his introduction.
Thanks, Bronson. I'm an independent WordPress developer and consultant, basically helping designers and agencies make their projects into fully functional websites. I'm also looking forward to getting out to WordCamp NYC this August, and just pretty much happy that I'm not the one waking up in the morning, Bronson. So, and that's pretty much thanks to our guest this week, Tom McFarlane. He's down in Atlanta, the founder of Pressware, spoken at countless meetups and WordPress events and daily blogger and a whole bunch of other things, the WordPress plugin boilerplate, which we'll get into, and Tom, I guess we'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, sure. As Jason mentioned, I work at Pressware. The dirty little secret is that I have that name, I have that company. I really have no idea what I'm doing. I just started with WordPress 1 month ago. I blog only because I don't know what else to do with my time. And I am still running the theme that you see that I'm running is one that I paid someone else to do. I really like 2012 because I really liked that year, so I really like to use the theme from that year. But in all seriousness, yes, I am the founder of Pressware, where I build custom WordPress products. Right now, I am primarily working in services, doing contract work for a number of amazing different clients, working on plugins, working on themes, some applications, stuff like that. I do try to blog daily, anything from related to WordPress and just high-level programming development, but I do have a Tumblr, Dev Practices. I guess those will be in the show notes because the domain is not easy to say out loud, where it's basically a day in the life of a programmer, more or less. And I've right now my biggest efforts are behind the WordPress plugin boilerplate, the Mayer theme. There's a couple of other things we have in the pipeline I'm sure we'll talk about. And then I also do a lot of work with Envato under the Tuts Plus code channel. That's specifically for WordPress.
Nice. Yes.
And somehow you managed to get some sleep in there too, Tom.
I've got two kids. One's a 2.5-year-old and one's 2 months old. So as far as sleep is concerned, I'll get that in a few years.
Cool. All right. So yeah, as you mentioned, we're going to be mostly focusing the first bit of the show on the WordPress plugin boilerplate. So can you tell us a little bit about this project, Tom, and its origin, how it got started, and what got you motivated to start developing this?
Yes, absolutely. The WordPress plugin boilerplate, I started it, and I started the WordPress widget boilerplate pretty much at the same time. Now, to give a little bit of background, because I always get this question, is the widget boilerplate under the same amount of development as the plugin boilerplate? And the answer is no. The reason being, widgets have a pretty much fixed way that you go about creating them. If you read the codecs, if you look at other widgets, if you look at even the widget boilerplate, I mean, there's not too much to add right now. That's not to say that it can't be refined and it can't be improved. But when I created the plugin boilerplate, several years ago, it was done when I was in the business of creating a number of different custom plugins for people, and I found myself doing a lot of the same patterns, doing a lot of the same legwork, and so I just kind of created a standard format, file organization structure, a couple of functions, threw it up on GitHub, and I was using it, and I would slowly add to it as I found more and more things that were common functionality. I'm not exactly sure what happened between now and then, but more people found it, more people began contributing to it, which is awesome. More people opened up issues, asking questions. Some of them challenged the way I was doing things, which I love, because I think when people do that, it helps make you a better programmer. And then from there, it has gone up to a point where we're in a current state of rewriting the boilerplate. We mean myself, and there's three other developers I have on a more or less ad hoc team. It's a stellar, they're really good guys. I'm not paying them. They're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. So it's me, Josh Eaton, Brad Vincent, and then Auric Pogson. We have some fantastic plans for the next version, but overall, it was created as a way to jumpstart plugin development using the WordPress coding standards and best practices, and then it's kind of grown out from there as a way to build in some functionality for, say, multi-site blogs and to make sure that localization is handled correctly and things like that.
Excellent. Yeah, that's one thing with Jason and I, we've been talking in the last Hangouts about kind of consistency of your code, and I guess that's a real motivator and driver of this project, and that's why you've got started. And yeah, it's definitely snowballed and been an excellent, excellent project.
Well, thank you. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So in terms of your pull requests and things that you got along the way, how much have you actually learned from other people?
So that was an accident. Did not mean to put on the pirate hat and the birthday cake. but I don't know. What do you guys think? I see the mustache just appeared too. I feel as if I cannot be taken as seriously as something. Let me remove it. There we go. Although maybe I am a pirate. Anyway, so as far as pull requests are concerned and learning from other people, so pull requests, I think, can be broken down into three different ways. The first way is that there are people that are just trying to add some code in to try to make the project better. Whenever that's happening, I want to review the code. I want to try to make sure that whatever's going to go in there is actually going to help and it follows the WordPress coding standards, that it fits in well with the vision that I have for the boilerplate. I know that it's open source, but that does not mean there can't be a vision for the project. And so if someone submits a pull request, and it's an awesome piece of code, but it doesn't fall in line with the vision of the project, there's no shame in rejecting it. I mean, you should be polite and give some reasons as to why. The other type is there's people who will submit pull requests. Sometimes I think to, I hate saying this, but they just kind of want to get their name as a contributor. So sometimes they submit code comments. Sometimes the comments are actually really helpful. I'm not meaning to play that down or disparage that. Sometimes there are comments that are just kind of like, this can't go in. I don't even know. Like, why do you have to have this? And then there's other pull requests that will be like these major refactoring of functions that will, before I merge them, I want to have a discussion with the developer as to, well, why are you doing it this way versus this way? And sometimes it's a point of education. Sometimes we end up kind of learning from each other, and so we end up rejecting that pull request, kind of creating a hybrid pull request, merging it. But the in terms of learning from pull requests, there's just been some really good developers out there who are far more skilled than I am in writing code who have contributed to it, and it's been really, really good. It's been really, really beneficial to have them submitting code to it.
Yeah, excellent. I'll leave the next question to Jason.
As far as the GitHub updater, I guess in case some of our viewers aren't aware of what that plugin does, can you kind of mention how that works and how you brought that into it?
So the GitHub updater is a plugin created by, I may butcher his last name, and if so, apologies in advance, but it's created by Andy Fragan. And he, what's interesting about him is that by day, he's a surgeon, and by night, he's like a WordPress hobby developer. And it's like, I mean, I remember when I was in college doing, I remember a lot of my fellow computer science students, some of them wanted to go into medicine, and I'm like, I don't want to work on any medical devices where anyone's life is at stake. You know, I can't do that. But anyway, Andy developed this GitHub updater that basically allows you to host and run your WordPress plugins from GitHub. You can include a couple of tags in your plugin headers, and then in the dashboard, the plugin dashboard of WordPress, whenever there's an update or a change or anything like that, the WordPress dashboard will show you, hey, there's an update to the plugin, it'll download it, it'll install it. And it's a way that if you opt to put a plugin on GitHub versus the WordPress plugin repository, then you can do so. There's definitely some advantages, and there's some disadvantages to doing that. I'm personally a fan of it. That's not saying I dislike the plugin repository, but I do want to support the GitHub updater, and in the next version of the boilerplate, it will be supported. In terms of will it be baked into like the core plugin, I don't know yet if it will be something that we walk through in documentation, say, hey, if you want to follow, if you want to get the latest updates of the core plugin, here's how you do it, and so on.
Cool. Yeah, I've used that plugin myself for our client work, because sometimes there's plugins that you're consistently using internally that you don't want to release on .org, but you want to have them up to date. And for client work, that plugin by Andy's been amazing. I can't believe he's a surgeon as well.
Yeah, it's awesome. He is an awesome person. If you're not following on Twitter, I highly recommend it, because I think that everyone should be following smart people on Twitter. His handle is, I gotta make sure I get it right, because I get he and his GitHub handle mixed up sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's just his name, Andy Fragen. Yeah, F-A-R-G-E-N.
Cool. So we'll follow him. Excellent. And let you ask another question, Jason, as well.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about the, I guess, building it into the next release. What else is on the roadmap for the next version of the boilerplate?
All right. I'm glad you asked, because we have a ton of stuff. This is the first time that I think I've ever been vocal about... this is the first time that I have ever spoken about a lot of the stuff that's into the plugin, or into the boilerplate. First off...
We're holding you accountable now.
Do what?
We're holding you accountable now.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. I know I'm holding myself accountable. So we'll consider that. We'll go into a new section here called The Scoop. And so here we go. So we have, starting off, I guess just from top down, we've had two amazing designers who have created some amazing artwork that we're going to be using throughout a bit, throughout a landing page that we're creating. As far as landing page is concerned, we're going to take a couple of cues from Underscores, the automatic starter theme, that's going to allow users to kind of create more or less a custom download of the boilerplate that they need based on whatever kind of features they need for their plugin. There is going to be, we also took some, or the landing page is going to be more than just, you know, a nerdy GitHub readme. It's going to be an actual website. We've got a domain. There's going to be the logo and some design. Additionally, we're going to have some documentation, not only how to use it, but also some guides on if you're going to be introducing, say, meta boxes into your plugin, here's the right way to do it, here's how to do it with the boilerplate. In addition, there has been a lot of people asking about using things like Grunt, and I always give like a yes-no answer, and that's yes, we want to show you how to use it, no, it won't be part of core, because not everyone uses it. So the idea of the core boilerplate is whatever everyone absolutely needs to get off the ground will be there. Anything that is a nice to have, we will try to document, and if we don't, we're going to accept, I guess we'll accept pull requests as issues, but you know, if there's frequently asked questions or if someone wants to see something in a guide, that'll be there too. And there is also, the way that this thing is written is completely done from the ground up. We were following significantly better object-oriented best practices, all of which will probably be covered in several different blog posts, but... that's the area in which we're at. That's everything that's up with it right now.
Nice. Awesome. That sounds really exciting, and you've kind of addressed my next question, because I was going to mention that I've seen a Grunt version of this plugin that will generate your prefixes and things like that. And yeah, as you said, obviously not everyone uses it, so that won't be going to core or anything. But you have said that you'll have a kind of generator with this new site, similar to Underscore. So in terms of that, I'm curious, are you using PHP to do the changing of the plugin prefixes, or are you going to use Grunt to handle that and then output it?
Well, that's a point of discussion with the team right now, because there are some people who have done I think the first version, someone went ahead and did it on their own, and it was just PHP-based. Yeah. And that was going to be our initial plan of attack. However, we're putting the finishing touches on the boilerplate, then we're going to be coming back and talking about how to organize the site, how to organize all the various pieces of documentation. So I lean in the direction of saying that we're going to be using PHP, but that's up in the air. I try not to lock anything in too early, so we'll see.
Cool. So in terms of the work that you do at Pressware, how much is actual plugin development?
Right now, because it varies from, say, quarter to quarter, right now I would say that the plugin work I do is probably, if you're just talking about services that I'm doing for client work, it's probably a solid 80%, 90%. There was one quarter where I was doing nothing but plugin development. And it's some of those kind of types of plugins where it's like, man, I'd love to show what I'm up to. I'd love to share with others what's going on, some of the ideas other people have had, what they're doing with WordPress. But because of the nature of business, I can't, there's nothing to share. And out of respect for their own businesses, I don't talk about it. If they want to talk about it, that's fine. But I try to not cross that line.
Yeah, that's so your client base, they're aware of WordPress. They're coming to you specifically for functionality that they want to include on their WordPress site?
Yes. A few years ago when I got started, I was doing Ruby on Rails and I was doing WordPress, and then it became a little bit more, it became challenging to kind of juggle both, and I became much more enamored with WordPress. This isn't knocking Ruby on Rails. I think it's a fantastic framework, but because I have a propensity and I just kind of gravitate towards blogging, gravitate towards content management, WordPress just seemed like a natural fit. So I turned down the Ruby on Rails branch, for lack of a better term, of what I was doing and went 100% on WordPress. And since then, the only work that I've done for people has been all on WordPress. And so the people that come to me, either they're familiar with WordPress and they're saying, I think this should be on WordPress. So sometimes there's some consulting saying, yes, this could be, no, maybe not. Yes, it could be a standalone site, landing pages, things like that. And I'll do a little bit of that kind of work as well. But predominantly, like 9 out of 10 people that will come to me are already familiar with WordPress. Their level of experience varies, but they are familiar with WordPress and they want to use it, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's nice. I had a similar path too. I was on Ruby on Rails and WordPress at the same time, so definitely not.
Yeah. The biggest problem for me is, if I can go on a tangent, when Ruby on Rails updates, there is often so much that you have to go back and refactor, or you're afraid of something breaking. When WordPress updates, it's just kind of like, most of it works. So that's not to say you shouldn't be testing your code. Don't anyone misquote me, whatever. But there you go.
Yeah, that's my background. I used to do custom development for Joomla, and the main reason I switched from there to WordPress was backwards compatibility as well, because a lot of clients don't understand or don't want to pay for getting their site rebuilt because nothing's backwards compatible. So WordPress is a no-brainer for me because of that as well. So it's interesting we've all come from different areas, but for the same reason ultimately.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of work with another CMS. It was a contract job that I did about 3 years ago. I don't want to mention any names because I don't like just running my mouth about other people. It wasn't Joomla or Drupal, but it was another one. And I am not sure if I would rather chew on rusty nails or continue to work on that for a living. So WordPress is much better all around.
Yeah, I have a feeling I know which CMS you're talking about, though.
We can talk offline about that.
Cool. Jason came up with a really good question about working with designers who don't understand development. Is that something that you do? If so, how do you kind of handle communicating with them? Do you have any special tips or tricks that might help other developers communicate better with their designs?
That is a really good question. So when it comes to working with designers, There are two types of designers that I've worked with. There's those who are familiar with WordPress, and they know categories. They know at a high level, even though they may not use the term taxonomies or post types, they know that you can introduce custom types of posts. They know that you can introduce your own custom categories, things like that. And so when they introduce, or when they are doing design work, they will lay stuff out on a screen and they will say, here, I was thinking this could be a category. Here, I'm thinking this could be a custom post type here, or a type of post. Here is where the comments would be, or maybe we could do something really cool with this area over here and some widgets or a sidebar, whatever. There's some other designers that I've used where they conceptually know, hey, here's the main body, here's the sidebar, there'll be some little widgets, not in the context of WordPress, but just these random, little pieces of information that show up. And the design work that they do normally just fits like a glove to WordPress. If there are ever any problems, maybe this will follow her tips and tricks, I don't know. Here's the tip. If they ever have a question as if something can be done, I would say that you could either explain it to them or say, this looks good, but is there a way to format the data so that it looks like this? Or is there a way to format the data so that it's populated? How would this data be populated? Sometimes designers don't know how the information is going to get there. So just as I gave you a tip, the trick is if the designer isn't sure how the data is going to be populated, get rid of them. That's a joke. I have found that when you work with designers who are familiar with WordPress, you can get a lot done faster, and there is a common language that you can share, because I can sit there and say to them, oh, this will be a custom post type. Oh, this was where the sidebar, which in WordPress lingo, a sidebar could be at the bottom of a page, of a page. That's a whole other issue. But there's a common language you can use. If there are designers who are purely graphic designers, they are not at all familiar with any CMS, that puts a little bit more work on your end, but that should not necessarily be a deterrent for why you shouldn't work with them, because a good designer is going to be a good designer.
Yeah, you've touched upon some interesting things. With our designers, we've been able to obviously nurture them and train them a little bit. And one of the things we did earlier on is just use the theme unit test data, especially the page that has all the headings and images floated left, right, your block quote and all that, and we'll give that, just show them that. And so you have to style every element on this page in the content area so we know that's right. And, yeah, I guess the other thing with us, like you mentioned, is just going through the widget areas and specifically, because a lot of the times, as you kind of mentioned, designers will just put things data there and we'll go, well, that's not in WordPress, so we'd have to make a custom widget. How can we use something that already exists, or do we really want that? And if we do, we roll a custom widget.
So. Yeah, and that's where you start balancing scope creep, because if it's like, if this is something WordPress natively supports, but you want it, we can do it, but it's X more hours, which is then more money. If you'd rather wait until version 2, we can do that as well.
Yeah. Cool.
I was just going to say, as far as WordPress-centric, what do you think Core can do better? Meaning that, they seem to always be enhancing the ability to manage the front end, things like that, so... Themes always seem to get more progressive and advanced and things like that, but plugin development, it's always kind of, maybe they can't really do anything and it's just nice and extendable and allows us as developers to do really whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something specific that Core could do that maybe that you've thought about that could help us or maybe even progress it further?
This is a really good question. I'll be honest in saying that it's hard. This is one of the things where it's hard to think about, because I'm one of those people where, when it comes to, if you're going to come and say, hey, I want to write a plugin, and you can do it procedurally or you can do it in an object-oriented fashion, then someone's going to come to me and they'll say, I really want to write this plugin. I have this idea. How should I write it? I tend to lean in the direction of object-oriented programming for a number of reasons. For the sake of time, I won't bother going into them right now. But there's a lot of I've gotten some flack for that. I don't know why. I guess developers are some of the most opinionated people that exist on the planet. But you know, I'm not saying procedural programming is bad. Go ahead and do that. But in terms of what could Core or what could WordPress do better to help plugin developers out, I don't really have a straight answer for that. I feel like I believe that one of the things that they did really well was the widgets API, because there's kind of a straightforward way of, okay, here's, you need this class, you need four functions. Now, as you get more advanced, of course, you're going to be introducing new classes, you're going to be introducing new partials or new templates that go along with your plugin, but the actual way in which the widget is created is all the same. When it comes to plugin world, it's kind of the Wild West. And if anything, I think it would be kind of nice to see at least some degree of what is the preferred convention? What is the preferred convention? So, for example, we have our WordPress coding standards. You don't have to write your code that way. It's going to be frowned upon if you don't write your code that way. But you still can. You can still ship it. It'll still work. Maintenance is going to suck, but that's a choice that you've made. Similarly, when it comes to plugins, it would be nice to see some. One of the things I really like about Rails is that there's this convention over configuration. And I would like to see maybe some stronger conventions on how to get off the ground with writing plugins, because I feel like it's a little bit more of the Wild West when it comes to plugins. People don't know where to start. When they do start, they have questions. Why would you do it this way? Why would you do it this way? Where do I define my actions and filters? Where do I, you know, how much should I separate my files? There's just so many questions that it can breed, especially to people who are up and coming in the plugin development space. So, in all honesty, part of the boilerplate aims to try to fix that. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think that there's anything wrong with having to learn. Like, not everybody's going to hold your hand in everything you do with programming, let alone life. So it's okay to cut your teeth a little bit. It's okay to get some scratches and some scars. Learn it. And if you mess something up or whatever, that's okay. It's just code. It can always be fixed. If you look back at some of my old code on GitHub, it's embarrassing. But I leave it there for reference for other people. I leave it there as a reminder to myself as to how much I used to suck. And then the code I'm doing now, I'm leaving up as a reminder to my future self how much I suck right now. And but I'm also doing it because it's collaborative, man. People will work to make it better as long as you're not a complete jerk to them.
Yeah, and I think that that's why I like the boilerplate too. And I've used the boilerplate on a number of occasions, and nice because it does give you that base. And like you said, projections here, and this is how you break up your file system, and it makes sense. And you know, the whole MVC model and that kind of stuff, I like that thinking, and that's how, being a Rails developer, that's kind of where I grew up on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's what like a lot of those starter themes do when there's time out there, and they kind of give you those quote-unquote conventions on how to make a theme. Not so much by way of plugins that do that. There's not, you know, like you look up, you know, starter plugin, you know, there's like a handful, if that, and boilerplate's always there, you know.
The challenge with that. And this is true, I think, with starter themes, underscores as well, is that even though you're getting a foundation off of which to begin your code, there's still stuff that's in there that you're like, what is this doing? Why is this doing? And that's one of the things about developers and or anyone who's curious into getting into programming is that we often ask why about every little thing. Why is it this way? Why is it not this way? I'll drive my wife crazy sometimes because she'll be talking to me and all I do is say, why? No, I'm kidding. I'm not like that. But we do. But I do think that asking that question is really important, because once you get to the answer as to why, all of a sudden everything's demystified. You know, you're pulling back the curtain of the Wizard of Oz and you're like, ah, it's not even a man pulling levers behind the curtain. This is just a function that's sanitizing the data being rendered to the screen.
Yeah, one of the things that I really like about the boilerplate, Tom, is, yeah, not only is it probably proper object-oriented code, which is great to see, but the use of every single thing that a lot of plugins miss out on, like the uninstall hooks, your activation hooks, like everything's in there. So it's even just to show a new developer like who's getting onboarded, just to run through your boilerplate, you can explain how WordPress, like a good WordPress plugin works from start to finish with everything from where to go. And I really think that's a great thing about this plugin boilerplate.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's one of the things. It's like, but even that, I'll get questions as to why isn't the activation hook in this class? Why isn't it in this class? Why do you have it here? What do I need it for? And those are all really good questions. But it's also like, I wish that I had more time to answer all of these questions immediately instead of putting them in my inbox, starring them, and getting back to them, you know, when I have a few free moments.
Yeah, but that's the trouble with anytime you release something on GitHub, unfortunately, you kind of get the questions where you really do want to invest time educating people on why things work, because it's good for their learning, but there's only so many hours in the day, so you've got to kind of prioritize what comes in. Hopefully, like anyone watching the show, if you see any issues in the boilerplate, whether it's more of an educational question, then jump on board and help Tom out and give them an answer.
Yes, and if you have a question for something you don't understand, if you can ask Matt Medeiros on Twitter, it is @Medeiros is his handle. If everyone watching right this minute could please just spam him the most awkward picture of any bug, not software bug. I'm talking about like cockroach, spider. Please do it right now. I want to do some live trolling. Just please, if you're watching, please.
Actually,
tweet Matt Medeiros.
He did ask this question. I don't know if it's going to show up, but question and answer thing. But he did ask a question. Has anyone else noticed that Tom is going for the Brad Pitt look?
When did he ask this? Because I don't even know what that means.
I don't know. He's using the question and answer thing in the.
Oh,
I think I have that. Like your haircut and general look and feel, Tom.
Does anyone else notice that Matt Medeiros is going for the Hobbit look and feel? Let me see QA. Let me open this thing up. I see. Make sure. Okay. Anyway, whatever. I'm now closing this because he is irrelevant. but
we're gonna start anyway.
Oh, the war's been started long ago. Don't worry about it. It's just, I'm sorry to have brought it on your show.
The next battle.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. So we might pivot the conversation now from plugin development to theme development. So your time, you used to work at a company called 8-Bit, which a lot of people would know because you did amazing work and had lots of cool open source projects. Obviously, you had a few blogs around the place that people would remember too with great info, but part of 8-Bit, they had a thing called Standard, I believe, which you used to work on, Tom, and now you've got your own thing called Maya, or Maya, how do you pronounce it, Maya?
Mayer.
Yeah, Maya.
Should I start talking with an Australian accent for the rest of the show, mate?
Definitely. So in terms of Maya, were you inspired by 8-Bit Standard to kind of go, all right, I'd like to create my own custom and premium theme, and is that what kickstarted Maya, or what kind of got you started going down this route and releasing a premium theme on .com?
So, kind of a two-part answer. The 8-Bit and Standard did inspire me to create Maya. I loved my time with 8-Bit. I loved the work that we did. When it came time for us to kind of go our own way and pursue our own interests, that's what we did. As time went on, you know, we had sold Standard, and then I knew that I wanted to get back into theme development. I wasn't trying to create a Standard replacement. I was trying to create a theme that strictly fit my needs for what I wanted on my blog. And then the more I worked on it, and a lot of it was done in free time, I'll be the first to admit that I am not a designer. And anyone that is a designer can probably look at the theme and say, that guy is not a designer. The second thing is that I wanted something that was extremely lightweight. I wanted something that did not have a lot of options, and I wanted it to basically get out of the way so I could write. That was the main objective of the theme. And so when it came time to begin, when I thought about selling it, I had a pretty good relationship with the people at Automatic, and I said, hey, I have this theme. I'd love to begin selling it. Are you guys still taking on partners? And they said yes, so now it's in for sale in WordPress.com. It's still under maintenance, things like that. But in terms of competition or in terms of inspiration, it was never meant to be any form of competition for what 8-Bit was doing. It was never meant to be a replacement for what Standard was. This was a completely new project, something that I wanted for myself, and so that's what I did.
Cool.
And that's
why. Sorry.
Oh no, I was just gonna say that's why the dev table site is Maya. We're running Maya as well.
Oh, nice.
Well, we like it because it just gets out of the way, gets us to writing the blog post, and just go at it.
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal, and that was the ultimate goal. And what you see in the editor is what you're gonna see on the front end.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, some people did not like that feature. It's not going away, though. So.
Wow. That's like standard for all our client stuff. I find it strange that people wouldn't want it to see what it looks like.
So, I mean, whatever.
So how did you find the whole theme review process for your theme getting submitted to .com? How much time did it take up? Did you learn many things along the way? Is there anything... any info that you'd give people who also want the premium theme on .com to kind of get in place before they
First off, this was not my first time submitting a theme to .com, so I am familiar with the theme review process. That does not mean that I aced it, for lack of a better term, on my first time around, but it does mean I knew what to expect, and that is you submit your theme, and then you get ready to have a whole bunch of tickets handed back to you telling you a number of things that are wrong or are missing. Now, when I say wrong, they're not saying you're an incapable theme developer, why would you ever want to sell this thing? They're just saying, here are some ways in which you can improve how you're rendering information, how you're displaying information, etc. For people who are interested in getting into WordPress.com, be prepared for several rounds of having the audit team or having the theme review team audit your code, and then continually providing feedback. I've heard some people get frustrated with things like that, and I think some of that frustration comes from impatience because we just want to release. I think that's kind of a larger problem in the entire WordPress economy, but I digress on that point for now. And then the things that they suggest are nothing but things that will make you a better developer. They give you tips on not like if you've organized your code well from the beginning, you're not going to get a whole lot of tips on that. But there's a lot of helper functions that you're not they're in the codecs, but unless you're looking for them, you're not even going to know how to find them because you're not going to know they exist. But they give you some really good tips regarding formatting time across time zones or based on how the user has their time formatted in the settings. They give you tips on here's some more WordPress-specific functionality that you'll need to include. You can put it in this file so that if you release it anywhere else, you don't have to include it, and things like that. And overall, I really, really do enjoy working with the guys at Automatic, or the guys and girls at Automatic, and they're really good, too. Like, when changes come out, so I've made the mistake of sometimes I do these big bang releases where I send, like, an entire huge change set over, and they like more small iterative changes, which is actually a really good thing. The problem is that if you're someone who is trying to... if you're someone who's trying to do like semantic versioning and you want to bundle up a whole bunch of changes into one, it takes some thinking of how am I going to be doing this in such a way that plays well with Automatic's deployment schedule but also allows me to continue to version my theme in the way that I want. And that's still something that I'm working on because there's one major milestone that I'm trying to complete and all of it's under the hood. It's stuff no one's going to see, but it's necessary in order to progress and to grow the theme to the next level.
Cool, awesome. That's really good information for people. And I can understand when you're talking about some people getting frustrated about the review process and you kind of explain how it is an education process. A lot of things that theme developers who are used to client work don't encounter. So one of the things I know that I'm not very good at is internationalization, and that's something that obviously has to be baked into your theme so that people can use your theme in any language. And I think that there's still a lot of education to be done about internationalization, because a lot of us aren't bilingual, unfortunately, so we can't even kind of test our own work to see whether it's right. But yeah, I think that's a major one.
That's one thing I would recommend for that. So that used to be a weak point of mine as well. I learned every language that there is spoken across the planet, so I can translate all of my themes into every single language. but no, seriously, I have gotten in the habit of localizing all my strings, and the reason, and I've also got someone, if you guys, let me double check, he's someone who I highly recommend following on Twitter as well. I do this so that you guys are, because I want to give props where props are due. There is someone on Twitter, his name's Art Pox, and his username or his Twitter handle is Grappler, GRAPPLERULRICH. He is all about internationalization. And the reason that, like, I used to never internationalize my strings, and then I got in the habit of doing it. Well, some of the client projects that I'm working right now are only speaking U.S. English. And so I'm like in the habit of sitting here writing the code, and I'm wrapping it in the underscores function or in the underscore E function or something like that, and it's like, this is never, ever going to be translated. So then I have to go back and undo everything I've done. So, you know, the pendulum swings in both directions the longer that you work on it.
Yeah. While we're on internationalization, one of the plugins, as I mentioned, I'm not bilingual, unfortunately, but there's a plugin in the repository called Pig Latin, written by Nikolai, I can't even say his last name, he works at Automatic VIP, awesome dude, but yeah, basically, if you activate that plugin, it'll turn all your translatable strings into a Pig Latin word, so if you actually see a real English word on your screen, in a string, you know that you haven't made that translatable, so that's a real handy one to know. Ryan McHugh, yes, me about that one, so props to Ryan for mentioning that to me, and props to Nikolai making that one.
Both of those guys are awesome. Both of the that's an awesome way to test. I think it would be even funnier if you could replace it with lyrics from some random pop star song to be like, wait a minute, I didn't write this, but you know, I didn't write the plugin. So, but that really is a clever way to detect if you've done internationalization. Another one is the RTL plugin or RTL tester. And it'll flip your site from reading left to right, from leading right to left. And you can tell if you've properly internationalized stuff like that. And that's another good utility that I recommend.
Yeah, right to left, that's another thing that I haven't done much. But I helped Paul Gibbs out with his achievements plugin, because there's a grunt task called CSS Janus that will automatically run over your code and flip your floats from left to right automatically. So it's a great one when you don't want to manually do it. So pro tip for people.
Yep. That is good.
So now we might move along to the geekier side of things now, in terms of your application workflow. What kind of stuff do you use for your local development? Are you using MAMP? Are you using Vagrant? What tools do you use? I know you've got a lot of blog posts about this, so technically if people wanted to go read them, which I have, so I know all the answers. But you can go read them, but we'd rather hear it straight from the horse's mouth as such. So give us a bit of a rundown.
A horse. I'm a horse now.
I knew you'd say that.
So I use MAMP. I know that there are a bunch of friends that I have at 10UP, and I know that there's a bunch of friends that I have that are all around that are all about varying vagrants. But I'm still on MAMP. And the reason is because, primarily because of the ease at which it is to get up and running. It's not that I don't like Vagrant, I have nothing bad to say about it, but for all intents and purposes, Apache, MySQL, and PHP, that's the standard stack that I use for the work that I do. I haven't encountered any hiccups with that. And I would eventually like to learn Vagrant or get more familiar with that and maybe Nginx, but for the time being, you know, as a programmer, I am primarily concerned with source code, and I am primarily concerned with building things. And if there's any other software or any other tools that are going to hinder my ability to be productive, I need to keep them out of my toolbox for right now. So right now, MAMP is the thing that does not hinder me. So, and I know that some people have complained about running it on, I believe, Mavericks, I haven't had a problem with it at all. I still highly recommend it. I think that it still has, if you use the pro version, there's still a few things in there that if you're not completely familiar with how to do, you know, like dealing with, say, mail relays, it may be a little daunting, but for the most part, MAMP, I use MAMP, I use Git, and then I use Coda for my IDE. I can already hear a lot of the hisses and the gnashing of teeth with that. But again, it goes back to what makes you the most productive, and at this point in my time, or at this point in my work, I'm so used to Coda, so used to the shortcuts, so used to the way it goes about doing things, so used to the database front end, I can get a lot more done with it. I do think that I'll eventually be swapping over to PHP Storm 8 in the future. I'm not terribly happy with the UI, but I really do love the tools. My primary job right out of school was at a .NET shop, and so I miss Visual Studio more than I miss, well, as much as anyone can miss software. I'm not going to sit here and go that weird. I do miss Visual Studio, although looking back at it, it's kind of a beast of a UI as well, but the tooling that it has built in is just, it doesn't compare. So, anyway. Yeah, that's my standard stuff. Oh, and CodeKit. I still use CodeKit. I have used Grunt. I have used Bower. Especially for those who are committing to WordPress Core, you have used Grunt, but I don't use it as part of my daily workflow. I feel like sometimes other developers will try to make you defend the reason for your choices, and I mean, I have good reasons for the things that I choose, but I'm not going to hate on anyone because they don't use the same things I do as well.
Yep. I think that's a great point too, because ultimately, like you mentioned, it's about the tools not getting in the way. It's making me more productive. So I know myself, I'm quick to quickly test things and go throw it out and go, no, it's not going to make me any more efficient, so I'm not using that tool. So yeah, I will just stick to what makes me faster as a developer and doesn't get in the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Jason, I'll let you ask a few questions. I don't want to keep hogging questions.
So, I mean, you worked in 8-bit, and now you're Pressware. I know that you brought on somebody into Pressware. How was it transitioning from a whole team to, I guess, you working by yourself in Pressware?
So, I don't know if this is a little-known fact or what, but when I was at 8-bit, all four of the core four of us, we also had our own side businesses outside of 8-bit, and so I've had Pressware under a different name. I renamed it at the end of last year, but we all had our own side businesses, and as 8-bit continued to grow, we just kind of scaled back the work we were doing outside of 8-bit. And so when 8-bit folded, I just picked up the work from Pressware, and I went really, really hard at focusing on WordPress, and it's been really, really good. The amount of work that comes in, I love meeting different people all throughout the WordPress. When I say WordPress community, I know that word is overloaded because when people use it, some people mean bloggers, some people mean designers, some people mean developers, some people mean, I mean, I don't even know how far it reaches, but I generally enjoy chatting with anyone and everyone that has anything or has even used WordPress. I've spoken at some meetups where they're just bloggers, and that's fantastic. And these are bloggers that have got, like, I mean, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hits of their blog. But if you ask them to make a plugin, they couldn't do it. It's not knocking that. That's just another facet of the WP community. So, but in terms of moving straight onto Pressware from 8-bit, it was a little bit of an adjustment at first because, you know, you've spent a number of years of, what, 3 and a half years of your life working with a team, and now you've made a conscious decision to go work once again by yourself. And that's fine because I'm a bit of an introvert, so sitting in my office upstairs, you know, whatever, no big deal. But the amount of work that's come in has also necessitated bringing on a contractor to help me with a few things. And so that's who you also see at the bottom of the Pressware page right now. And so that was unexpected but it was a welcome change. And really, the thing that working strictly with Pressware that I enjoy is that it's given me the freedom to do a fair amount of blogging, or a lot of blogging. I guess it depends on what you consider a lot versus a fair amount. I get to blog
a day, pretty lot.
I do a lot of blogging. I get to pick some really cool projects. I get to work on some hobby projects, and I get to work on some products that I'm hoping to begin selling. Like, for example, I guess this is one of those Easter eggs you mentioned. One of the questions that I've gotten a lot is, when is Mayer coming to WordPress.org, or when is Mayer coming to, or is Mayer coming to self-hosted installations? And the answer is yes, and the answer is soon. I would love to get it done within the next month. There's a lot of overhead that comes with bringing a theme into the self-hosted marketplace because of payment gateways, because of support, because of things like that. And I am hoping to do that. I've got three other themes in the pipeline, one of which should be entering beta here in the next, probably the next 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And then there's two other ones I have planned. I don't know if they'll both get done by the end of the year, but I want to have those launched in both .com and for self-hosted installations as well. So you get the freedom to do a lot of different things like that. And I have the time to spend on things like the boilerplate as well. So it's been, it has its trade-offs. I mean, 8-bit was a lot of fun. I loved what we were doing, and Pressware is a lot of fun, and I love what I'm doing.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, thing, you gotta enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
So, I guess what was, like, we've all kind of had clients that come up with these crazy ideas. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, like you said earlier, you kind of keep it under wraps, let them talk about their projects. But is there anything that you've worked on that maybe a plugin or something that's been completely off the wall kind of thing that, you know, you might can share with us?
Yeah, and I'll even throw myself under the bus for this one, because I actually a few years ago created something that I absolutely hate. let's say that you go to a blog or a news site, and you scroll down 25-50% of the page, and then this thing swipes out from the bottom right telling you, check out this article, or you will not believe what has happened to this person's face when she was hit by a bus. I hate those sliders. I hate those things that pop out and tell you to go watch the Matt Report or anything like that. And so what I ended up doing was, I actually created a plugin that did exactly that. And it started off as a jQuery plugin because I needed it for a different project. But then when I was getting into WordPress, I thought, as the ignorant or as the uninformed or uneducated or unexperienced fool that I was, that this will make a great WordPress plugin. So I went ahead and wrapped the jQuery plugin in a WordPress plugin. And I hated it. And people would then, they would ask for support, how to change the colors. It was like, it looked like a sticky note. Like, it's already yellow and black. And people would want to change the color and change the font. And I'm just like, if I'm going to be working in this industry, working in this field, this is not the best way to come out swinging. So I just completely erased that. And I think that I created the first Matt Medeiros account on the plugin repo and attributed it to him.
That's awesome.
Cool.
So that's the most interesting and annoying one. The most fun. Wow. That's a good question. The most fun that I've had developing a plugin is actually. I can talk about this one. It doesn't sound exciting, but it does some really cool things. Part of it is a CSV importer. I know, let's all fall asleep now as soon as I'm talking about importing CSVs.
I think there's some viewers on that one.
So I apologize for anyone that has just left, and I apologize that I have just killed your show. there are, but then there's some things that it ties into and I'm almost regretting bringing this up because I think I'm about to put the final nail in the coffin. It ties into the Unix cron system, and then what users were able to do were able to take this massive CSV, drop it into a directory. The plugin picks it up on a schedule, and then it does this huge. It creates records. This associates them with birthdays. This associates them with anniversaries. It works with, or interfaces with Modern Tribes event calendar. It creates a directory. It calculates how long a person's been. It calculates how long a person has been working for someone, when their next birthday is. It'll handle weekly reminders. And it took a long time to write. It took a long time to test. You can imagine the hiccups we had when, you know, there's a poor guy who's been working there for 71 years, and it says it's been his first year. So, no, I'm kidding. That never happened. But that was a really complex plugin that was doing a lot of really cool things. It was fun. It was a huge learning curve in a variety of ways. But when you see that thing work, now that it's done, it is really, really cool to watch. I hope that doesn't sound conceited, but it was really cool to watch.
That's awesome. CSVs are really tricky in terms of importing. If anyone watching hasn't done that before, it's not until you actually get around to working with them that you realize how painful and difficult it can be to map some of the fields, and just cleaning characters out of the spreadsheet. It only takes one dodgy character that you haven't accounted for or cleaned, and your whole thing's stuffed. So yeah, it's a lot of work. Yeah. So props to you. That sounds really cool.
In theory, CSV sounds super simple, but when you get into working with them, you're like, why have you put a quote in a quote in a quote right here when I need to use quotes to parse your shit?
Yep.
Stop quoting.
Cool. So Jason's got another good question here. What's a tool is critical to your development? Like, what's your kind of, if you lost one of your tools, what would devastate you the most if it just disappeared or was no longer maintained?
WordPress.
Good answer.
That actually is a really good question. Let me look at my doc. If there was one tool that went away that I could no longer use, hey, is there a replacement, or am I literally just completely, I have no access to anything similar? Like, how strict?
Let's go with completely no access to anything similar to make it a more difficult question.
Oh, wow.
No, I probably just killed the question. No, I canceled that.
No, you didn't kill the question. You're making me think. So there's a lot of developers, there's a lot of really tech people that say everyone should be an expert at the command line. At some point in your career, I think that that's true. At another point in your career, I think that you realize that working with the command line, it can save time during certain things, and it can be a real time suck in other things. And for me personally, I enjoy using front ends for both Subversion and for Git more than I do the command line, mainly because of some of the visual cues, some of the visual heuristics, some of the visual images, or not images, some of the visual just keys that it provides with respect to what's going on with your branch or what's going on with your commits, that when you dump all of that out onto a terminal screen, it's not that you can't make sense of it, but you're going to spend a whole lot more time trying to make sense of it than when you have a visual. So I would say the one app, or two, if I can go a two-parter, would be Cornerstone and Tower. If I had to pick one, I don't know how strict you guys are, then it would be Tower. I would not want to be without Tower.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Interesting. Good answer.
I think mine would probably have been Alfred.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about with Yosemite coming out? Alfred's got to step up the game.
Well, I don't know. See, Alfred, if you get into that power pack and you get into workflows and all that stuff, like, I have a whole lot of different workflows. And Spotlight ain't going to do that anytime soon.
That's true. That's true.
So, I mean,
if you're a basic Alfred user, then whatever. Right. But if you're Mr. Resnick, who has automated his home using Alfred,
I wish. Maybe that's the next step.
Well, get Nest, get a Dropcam, get the Nest fire, get the Nest, what is it, smoke detector, get a robot, get Google Glass, well, hook it up to Alfred.
I do have a Roomba. Maybe I can hook into that somehow.
There you go. Yeah. Use your little vacuum robot via Alfred. I mean, the thing's name is Alfred. It's Batman's butler. Why is he not doing more for you?
Cool. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up. Thanks very much for your time, Tom. Really appreciate it. It was so good to have you on the show. I might let you do the outro, Jason, because I always do the intro and outro, and I stuffed up the intro this morning because it was too early. So I'll let you do the outro with all the things that I should have said.
Yeah, sure. Tom, where can people reach out to you when they need to reach out to you?
I don't like people reaching out to me. No, I'm kidding. You can find me on Twitter at Tom McFarland. You can email me at any time at tom@tommcfarland.com, and I will respond to your email. I respond to every single email I get, even if it's some kind of weird spam. Well, not spam, but if it's something that's completely irrelevant to what's going on. You can also find me on my blog at tommcfarland.com. And those are pretty much the three main places. I don't do a whole lot of social networking. I don't do Facebook. I don't do High Five, and I don't do MySpace. So Twitter, email, blog.
Awesome. Great. Thanks again for coming, and I'm glad Bronson got up early. And thank everybody for tuning in. And don't forget to...
Where can everybody find you fine folks?
Sure. You can find me online. It's in my lower third there. At Rez, and Rez.com is where anybody can locate me there. Bronson?
Cool. Yeah, you can find me or my business at Stenza on Twitter. If you want to follow me for some strange reason personally, you're probably going to get some bad tweet here and there because I'm a little bit loose sometimes. At Bronson Quick for me. And yeah, just if you got any questions, you can also leave comments on WP Dev Table around the place if you want to interact and engage with us as well.
And you can subscribe to our newsletter, which we're starting to ramp up with. That's at wpdevtable.com/subscribe. And you can find us also on iTunes and YouTube, of course, and you can join in on the discussion there. And if you're a first-time viewer, then please be sure to catch up on our past shows and get your dev on.
All right, thanks. Definitely. Hopefully this was a good show. I tip my hat to you guys. Rub my mustache and beard. And everybody listen to the previous episodes. These are good guys and they're doing good work.
Cool. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Cool.
See you guys. See ya.
Gotcha.